Timothy Talks, Season 1, a podcast designed to kindle afresh God's gift in every Christian. Join us as we explore the ups and downs of the church in our earliest centuries. Greetings and welcome to Timothy Talk. We are at episode 3 in season 1. We are talking about the early church and missions. The title of this talk is To the Ends of the Earth. My name is Matthew Risher alongside Daniel Pensimone. At the end of Matthew's gospel, Jesus gives a very direct command to his apostles. Go therefore, make disciples. And we want to see what did this look like in the first century, in the earlier centuries. So, Daniel, I'm going to throw it over to you, and really, can you tell us what was unique about the Christian faith, and what caused it to spread so rapidly?
Christianity was so different from the religions that existed during that time, and we'll talk in a moment about the philosophy that exists, the mystery religions, the traditional or classical Roman religion of the time. But unlike any of these religions, Christianity is known for its acceptance of anyone who wants to come. Anyone who wants to hear the message of Jesus is accepted. So we're talking about slaves, we're talking about women and children and the lowest classes of society. The Christian church accepts these people, whereas most of these religions that exist alongside it don't want to be associated with those people. In AD 70, Jerusalem fell to the Roman armies. And ever since that time, the church has had a Gentile flavor to it. So that becomes another one of these factors that allows for the propagation of the church in a Gentile world.
So you're saying Christianity is really revolutionary, really countercultural in a society where you have this polytheistic Roman religion and this monotheistic Jewish religion. Christianity really stands out of accepting all types of people, all kinds of people, but there's only one way, and that way is through Christ and people coming to Christ.
Exactly. The countercultural aspect of Christianity was a huge reason why Christianity grew and expanded by leaps and bounds. So let's talk really briefly about the different types of religions that exist already in the Roman world. Christianity is coming into a region where, first of all, we have philosophy. Philosophy isn't technically religion, but it's very close in that it offers to people an opportunity to have an experience with the divine. Aristotle said the highest branch of contemplation is theology. And the philosophic ideal of Aristotle is that the worship and contemplation of God is the highest. Now, Aristotle, that's sort of strange to hear that coming from Aristotle. It sounds better coming from Plato, based on some of the philosophy that Aristotle taught. But even in his highest moments, that's how he viewed it. That he wanted to worship and contemplate God. And the philosophers in general have this view of God as we are close, we are the ones who are seers. That was another name for the philosophers, those who see. They wanted to see God. But philosophy is limited. You can't become a philosopher if you don't have lots of time and money to learn about philosophy. You have the classical, traditional Roman religion, the myths, the different deities, the polytheism that the Roman Empire is steeped in. But no one really believes this. Edward Gibbon, in his famous account of the Roman Empire, says that the various modes of worship which prevailed in the Roman world were all considered by the people as equally true, by the philosophers as equally false, by the magistrates as equally useful. And that really highlights the fact that even though everyone claims to believe it, those who really think about it know that there's nothing to it. They don't believe it. It's just a myth that's been handed down from generation to generation. And it's useful for civil society to continue functioning as holding to one belief. Then you have the mystery religions. These are cultic groups, generally focused around one specific deity, maybe in one specific temple. And they offer to the common people an opportunity to see things that no one else has seen. The whole idea behind a mystery religion is we're going to show you something that no one else knows about. You're going to become initiated into mysteries. Now, these mysteries were so well guarded that even today, we often don't know what exactly the mystery was. They were not passed down through history. But people are running after these mystery religions because they want a closer experience with God. Now, bringing all this back to what we're saying, we're talking about the countercultural aspect of Christianity. When you see people dying at the hands of gladiators are being torn apart by wild animals in an amphitheater because of what they believe. You think these are people who have seen God. Because if they didn't know something about God, they wouldn't submit to all of this. And so in that sense, the countercultural aspect of Christianity, the fact that they believed it and they held to it regardless, differentiated these people from all of these other religions that weren't offering people the truth.
Yeah, I mean, it was a faith worth dying for. People were willing to give their life for it, and that obviously caught some attention of many people who were following something that they knew not to be true. But when we look at the Christian religion and really the spread of it, it didn't remain in just one location. It actually spread to the ends of the earth. Talk to us a little bit about this. Where did Christianity spread? How did it get there? What were some of the regions that were massively influential at this time period?
Well, a Christian church starts in Jerusalem, and from Jerusalem, the church spreads into Judea. But from Judea, it doesn't seem to spread a lot. We have a little bit into Samaria. The apostles are preaching the gospel. The church was told to go. But what we find as early as the book of Acts chapter 8 is that the church is sitting in one place. And that's why persecution comes in. God divinely orchestrates to send persecution into the church, flinging it into other parts that it wasn't preparing to go to. This is really interesting just to see the sovereignty of God in history. In a sense, you could say forcing his people to go to places that they weren't planning to go to. But through that, the message spreads into all the different parts of Palestine, into Syria, so that Antioch, a city in Syria, becomes a major center of Christian missions in the first century.
And even in the book of Acts, we see Paul and his missionary journeys, really bringing this gospel to Asia Minor and Turkey and even Greece, really expanding the Christian religion to, hopefully, the ends of the earth. Well, with that, tell us a little bit about Italy.
Italy is the place that everyone wants to know. Who brought the gospel to Italy? And we really don't know. We know that by the time of Paul, Paul is already writing to the church in Rome, but he doesn't tell us how the gospel got there. And I think this really highlights something that's very important in the history of the church, is that so often the gospel goes to places just by ordinary people. We're talking about merchants, soldiers, sailors, even slaves, who the main thing to take away from this is that in Italy, in Spain, North Africa, all of these different places, we don't have names of specific people who brought the gospel to it. All that we know is that there were faithful Christians spreading the message.
And that's a really beautiful thing when we think about it, because the name that has to be remembered is the name of Jesus Christ, because he is the gospel. He is the good news that is given to men, the name by which they're saved.
We got the same thing going on in Gaul, even Britain, these different places that we don't know who did it, but we know that there are Christians. For example, you take Britain. There's very little exact knowledge of Christianity in Britain. And Britain's an interesting case because there were hints about Christians that lived in Britain during the time of the Roman Empire. Around the fall of the Roman Empire, there's massive social upheaval. Britain is invaded multiple times. It's almost like the gospel is kicked out of Britain. So it has to be replanted in Britain. But that's beyond the scope of what we're talking about. What we do here is that there's these hints of Christian communities. And the Emperor Hadrian builds a wall. It's known as Hadrian's Wall. He cuts Britain in half. He says half of Britain is for Rome, and the other half is for the barbarians. But there's hints of Christians who live on the other side, the barbarian side of Hadrian's Wall. And it's just this beautiful illustration, really, of how the message of Jesus is jumping over walls.
Yeah, we see God really empowering his people to fulfill the commission he sent them on. Well, with that, we'll take a quick break. And on the other side of the break, we'll see how it wasn't just the Roman Empire that was influenced by the gospel.
We are so excited that you're joining us for Timothy Talks, and to show our appreciation, we're giving away over $400 worth of free gifts. Let me tell you about our current giveaway and how you can have a chance to win. Not every believer is called to the foreign mission field, but every Christian is called to live a life on mission for the glory of King Jesus. In January, thousands of God's people are going to gather in Atlanta, Georgia at the G3 Conference. The upcoming theme is the mission of God, a biblical understanding of missions. The G3 Conference will host many gospel-centered speakers, including Vodi Bakum, Tim Challies, Stephen Lawson, David Platt, and John Piper. They'll ponder questions like, what is the mission of God, and how is the Great Commission applicable today?
At Timothy Talks, we appreciate the work of the G3 Conference, and we want you to be there. So in conjunction with the G3 Conference, we're giving away 2 free tickets. So how do you get a chance to win? Well, it's simple. Just send a quick email to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com and mention today's keyword, missions. That's right. Send an email to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com and mention today's keyword, missions. Every episode, we will give you a new keyword, and each time you enter the keyword, you'll get another entry in the drawing. So the more you listen to Timothy Talks, the more chances you'll have to win. So don't forget, send the keyword to timothytalkspodcast@gmail.com and tune in to future episodes for more chances to win.
All right, jumping back into things, Daniel, we're getting outside of the Roman Empire, the scope that was there, and where does the gospel go from here?
Several different places, but just as a reminder, it's already permeated the Roman Empire, and Stephen Neal says in his book, we may say that by the end of the 3rd century, so we're talking about 300 AD, there was no area in the Roman Empire which had not been penetrated to some extent by the gospel. So, massive church inside the Roman Empire. Now, outside we've got Armenia. It's a country, it's politically independent of Rome. And there's a fascinating story of this man by the name of Gregory the Illuminator. Now, his story is very interesting. He's thrown into prison for years, he's tortured, but eventually he has an opportunity to share the gospel with the king of Armenia. His name is Tiridates III. And Tiridates not only accepts the gospel himself, but he also declares that his kingdom will be an officially Christian kingdom. Now, we can talk about that, the pros and cons of that. But regardless of whether that was a wise decision or not, what we have here is the first Christian kingdom in the history of the world, the nation of Armenia. India is another place that the gospel goes to at a very early time. There's this legend about Thomas the Apostle. And again, we have to accept that this is a legend. It's not verifiable fact. We're assuming that there's a kernel of truth somehow. But according to the legend, Jesus appears to Thomas in a dream, and he calls on Thomas to go to India to share the gospel with the Indians. He says, "Fear not, Thomas, go away to India and proclaim the word, for my grace shall be with you." Well, Thomas doesn't feel qualified to take the gospel to India, and so according to this legend, God divinely orchestrates that Thomas is taken as a slave, and he's carried into India, and he shares the gospel with the Indians. There's this king by the name of Gondopharus that's very important in this legend. For years, people thought that Gondopharus was just this made-up king, and then later archaeology indicated that Gondopharus is a real king who ruled in northern India and southern Afghanistan and Pakistan. Anyways, Thomas interacts with these people in India, and he goes as far down as the Malabar coast in southern India, bringing the gospel, according to this legend, to India in the first century.
Yeah, so if the account is true, Thomas could be considered maybe a New Testament version of Jonah.
Exactly. And we've also got places like Persia. Persia is a separate kingdom from the Roman Empire. In fact, it's the main antagonist of the Roman Empire. But in Persia, we have accounts of a massive church that exists in Persia. We don't have as many details. It wasn't as well recorded. But there's hints all over the writings of the early church, those who are in the Roman Empire, of an existing church that also exists in Persia. Now, historically, the church in Persia goes through a much more difficult time than the church in Rome, because after the time of Constantine in 313, Rome declares itself a Christian nation. However, Persia, being the enemy of Rome, has to distance itself from Rome. And when Rome becomes Christian, Persia wants to distance itself from Christianity. So there's a massive persecution that goes on in Persia against Christians. It's actually far worse than the Roman Christians experienced in all of the 10 persecutions under the emperors. All of this to say that there's a thriving church in Persia. There's an account that the apostle Jude, also known as Thaddeus, went to Persia. And there's also a similar account that Thaddeus was one of the 70 disciples that Jesus commissioned. So there's actually some question, are they referring to the same Thaddeus or different Thaddeus? But either way, there's this account of one of those who knew Jesus by the name of Thaddeus going into Persia and eventually being crucified in a city of Persia known as Edessa. You also have this king that I mentioned, Gondopharus. He comes to us in the legend of Thomas going to India. And I said that Gondopharus rules in what's today known as southern Afghanistan. So the gospel is going into Persia. It's going into places like Bactria in modern-day Afghanistan, Baluchistan, modern-day Afghanistan, all of these places that today we think of them as Muslim regions. Officially, there are no Christians in those places, according to the official government accounts of Afghanistan. But we hear of thriving churches, many churches existing in these places, in the very far reaches of the world. And it's not even the time of Constantine. We're still talking about the early church.
And something we see here is that it's not just the apostles that are being sent out to plant churches and to preach the gospel, but like you said earlier, it's the everyday man. And that really causes us to look at ourselves. Daniel, I'm just going to ask you a simple question, but what are some lessons for the church today based on the movement and the activity of the early church?
Well, don't back down. Don't back down in your faith. David Calhoun has a great quote. He says, Christianity was victorious because the early Christians outlived, outthought, and outdied the world around them. And if you take those three concepts, they outlived the world around them. They lived a different sort of life. A different life than the people that they were with, a countercultural life. People in the Roman Empire thought that Christians were weird. And of course, we have that today. It doesn't change. It's true regardless. If you're going to be a Christian, you're going to live a different life. They outthought. They had thought through things. Christians were thinkers in the early church, and it should be true today. Justin Martyr, one of the famous apologists of the early church, tells about how he went from philosopher to philosopher, one philosophy to the next, trying to get to know the divine. And eventually, after failing at all of these different things, he comes across a man who begins to talk to him about the prophets and about Jesus. And he finally has the answer. And he's a thinker. So the church is living differently than others. It's thinking deeply about things. And then it's dying way more than anyone else. They're being crucified. They're being torn by lions, thrown to gladiators. They're dying and they're giving testimony to the power of their faith. So really the point here is that they're living a countercultural life. And they're not afraid of it. And I'm afraid that today there's so much of an effort to be like the world, culturally to be like the world, in our message, to make it as palatable to the world as we possibly can. And you don't see that going on in the early church. You see them being considered weird people, having a strange message that sounds really exclusive, that sounds, you would say, intolerant, a very intolerant message, a very different lifestyle than anyone else is living. And because they're not trying to make it like everyone else, the power of the gospel is shining forth in that.
Something we see really in the modern missions movements that are going on today is this idea of building bridges really from the secular to the evangelist. But what we see in the first century is the bridge is going from the unevangelized to Christ, and it's an unashamed gospel that's being presented. It's there's no compromise in the message. If you want to hit a little bit on the idea of this is an exclusive message.
Exactly. Rome would have been happy for Christianity to join with all of the other religions. And they were going to be happy to put Jesus alongside Zeus in the temple if the two can coexist. But Christianity says they can't coexist. It's either Rome with all of its religions, its emperor worship, its fables and myths, its philosophies, or it's Christ. You can't have both at the same time. And so Christianity is saying, we're going to live a different way. We're going to preach an exclusive message of Jesus Christ is the answer. And you have to take it or leave it. There's no middle way.
And they weren't waiting for social or economic change, were they? They were sharing the message right where they're at in the situations they were going in.
Exactly. And that's where you've got persecutions. You have massive persecutions. Thousands and thousands of people dying. You don't have a rich church that's being able to pour millions of dollars into missions efforts. You have a persecuted church. You have a church that's struggling to survive in a pagan world. And yet the gospel's still going forth into all of these places despite that. They're not waiting for circumstances to be perfect. They're just obeying.
So if we look at the circumstances we are today, we can really understand that this gospel message, this mission, it's for us too. We'll conclude things here, and I appreciate the topic today. Daniel, I'll leave you with this question that we ask at the end of every podcast. Why is this important to us? We're 2,000 years removed from these events. What should we know?
Well, first, God's preserving his truth. He's doing this by increasing the Christian community all across the world so that later we're going to be able to read about the church in many different places. And those churches that are planted by apostles and planted by people that we don't know their names, those churches are then recording the scriptures. And then they're passing the scriptures on to other people and passing them on and passing them on and telling other people about this message. And the message just keeps being passed on until it comes to us today, 2,000 years later. So I think this is a glorious tribute to how God's preserving his truth. And then, of course, God's magnifying his son. I mean, that's what this is. These are ancient people groups, if you want to use that language, ancient people groups that are recognizing the value of Jesus Christ. And here's what I think is fascinating. We don't know many of these names. We don't know many of these stories. They're not recorded in history books. But they had stories. Every single one of these people had stories of how Jesus Christ impacted their lives. And we have eternity to learn those stories.
Yeah, they sought after a high theology. They wanted to know who God was and know him rightly. And as we say here, a high theology leads to high doxology. The more truth you know and believe, the more you will love and worship the God who made you. That's all we have for today. Till next time, I'm Matthew, along with Daniel. This is from Timothy Talks.